Welcome to the Food and Farming Podcast from AHDB, keeping levypayers informed and at the heart of the conversation.
Hi, I'm Jamie McCoy, Senior Knowledge Exchange Manager for Dairy at AHDB. And in this episode of the Food and Farming Podcast, I'm looking at grazing. Let's face it, with the wet weather we've seen so far this spring, on top of strong winter grass growth, it could be tricky to get our cows out early. But with our profits affected by production costs, just how can we make the best use of the grass we grow? Over the next half an hour or so, I'll try to answer that. And I'll be joined by a pasture-to-profit consultant from the south of England, Piers Badnell. But before we hear from Piers, we'll hear from some grass-based farmers who deal with the issues of grazing firsthand. I recently headed to Wet West Wales to meet with Anna Bowen and Freddie Lauder. Freddie began by telling me about their normal growing conditions and how much grass they grew last year.
Well, normal conditions are fairly variable. Each year is different, but 23 we grew about 13 tonnes, and we tend to grow sort of between 11 and 14 most years. Usually a bit of drought in the summer the last few years, but wet on the shoulders, autumn and spring.
Okay, and I think we've talked before about grass utilisation being a key driver of profitability in this business. How do you maximise your grass utilisation?
Well, we try and grow as much as we can and eat as much as we can, and days out at grass instead of feeding silage is key for us. So early turnout is key.
What do you actually do to achieve an early turnout? Because it's easy to say, isn't it? But the practice, you want to set yourself up for a good grazing season, not ruin it before you've started.
So we were set up pretty well with paddock systems, smallish paddocks, which most fields have a maximum of two feeds in. When we've got cows calving down, we'll get them straight out to grass, bring them in if it's wet earlier. So we do on-off grazing. They could be out for an hour and a half, 2 hours max.
Okay.
If it's really wet, but to get the feed into them, they can eat most of what they're going to eat in that day, in that time. So get them in, and if they're standing in the shed or on cubicles, that's fine as long as they've had that grass.
We've got good grazing infrastructure, so tracks across the whole grazing platform, and we've got entry and exit gateways for all the paddocks, so cows can go in one way and go out another way, which helps a bit with poaching.
And so you set up like that year round, or did you learn that on the way and have to cut holes in fences and add some extra gateways, or what?
No, it's been set up like that for
It's been like that since we've been here, but we've changed a few things around, and sometimes there's some tactical reels going out to back fence wetter portions of fields, or not let cows onto some portions of fields at all if it's wet in that part but dry in other parts.
So how do you choose where you're going to send your cows when they go out for the first time?
The first time is probably not representative of our grazing policy, because they go to a close field and they run about like idiots and throw clods of mud up in the air, and you kind of, so we've got a bank near the yard, which is sort of sacrificed a bit. It's not particularly, it doesn't grow grass particularly well, so I don't mind. It's not the highest quality. Once we get after a day or two,
yep,
and they get their heads down and remember how to graze again, you usually start with close paddocks, to be honest, just
yep.
As we're busy in calving, it makes things a little easier.
And because you're spring block calving, not the whole herd going out in one go, I guess it's the fresh calvers that go out at once?
Yeah, we have some empty that we run around through the winter and through to the next year. But there might be as few as 20 or 30 cows going out first time.
Have you done your first grass walk of the year yet this year?
No, I keep setting aside time and then it starts raining again, so I haven't yet. But my estimate would be we've got loads of grass left over from the wet autumn, as it came in a bit earlier than we usually would. I think our average cover is probably getting up towards 2,400.
So with sort of such a high starting cover, how will you work to hit residuals then?
I think that first round, especially if it's wet conditions, I think I'll probably relax my residual targets a little bit, and maybe if they only graze down to 1,800, I'm okay with that, because I'd rather not damage it for the second round when the grass is really flying and they're heading towards peak. So yeah, I would never, they're not going to go in the same area twice, so they're not going to be cleaning up after themselves.
Okay.
In this first round, I shouldn't think, unless it dries up a lot.
But, okay. And what about silage ground? How do you set yourself up for a good silage season and kind of clean up that winter growth, I suppose?
A normal year, we outwinter our R1 heifers, on our silage ground, just on deferred grass. This winter it's been so wet, we haven't actually, we've kept them in, but we've got the grass there, so they're out now, eating it. They've been out for 3 or 4 days. It's pretty wet, I'm moving them every single day. And we'll see how it's goes. We need to clean up that grass. It was either that or we have to cut it, but we wouldn't get a tractor in there at the moment. So we'll whip round with the heifers, clean it up as best as we can, and if we have to do a bit of patching up, seeding, that'll help us again if we've poached it badly. But
we did do a very early cut of bales 1 year.
We have done
March,
it before.
Where we hadn't cleared everything out with the heifers. All winter growth there.
But you can't make silage in the rain, but you can graze in the rain.
True.
The ground conditions are a limiting factor for grazing.
Most
years, but particularly this year.
Because
we'd 2022, the cows were out grazing in the day until the 1st of December. And this year they came in at least a month before that.
In full time by, I think, 10th of October or something like that.
You can probably hear the dog in the background. He's having a great time and got particularly excited when we started talking about doing a grass walk. So we'll have to put the plate meter by the front door and he'll be ready to go. So you are one of our Forage for Knowledge contributor farms. What does that actually mean?
Anna takes samples.
I take a grass sample once a fortnight from a field we're about to graze and send it away, and then we get the analysis through, which we can refer to, which is really, it's really good to see what's going on in the paddocks through the season, so we can sort of think about how it changes what we're allocating, what we're feeding, and sometimes having to think about the concentrate feed that's going in as well, because our aim really is to feed as little as possible and just maximise use of grass.
And as soon as the protein in the grass goes up in the spring, I drop the protein in the cake.
Yep.
So back down to 14% then, as soon as the protein's looking good in the grass. And our weekly measurements go into it as well. And it's good to see how we're comparing with the rest of the country. It's interesting, more than anything.
We have been thinking that last year we did a lot more like monitoring of milk ureas, because we starting to think about, you know, high milk ureas through breeding might be impacting fertility, so bringing the protein in the cake back just to try and control that a bit as well.
And I suppose another thing about spring grass is you know, staggers and mag and things like that. Do you do something specific there?
We put a lot of mag flakes out in the water, in the collecting yard, and around the parlour we have bags constantly in there, bags of holes spiked in them, and then every time we shut the cows in, we pour, I can't remember the grams, but we put the right amount of mag flakes in the water trough.
I understand you've got some herbal lays on the farm. Do you manage those at all differently when you're thinking about, you know, early turnout?
They seem to be, so the herbal lays went in as a bit of drought, as a drought tolerant lay. And if you went to look at them today in February, they don't look too different from a normal ryegrass clover lay. And it's when it gets dry that they seem to, the herbs, the chicory and plantain seem to not take over, but seem to dominate over the ryegrass, which is why they're there. So I don't really treat them any different. In fact, they've probably gone in the drier fields, so they're more likely to get grazed earlier.
And what about spring fertiliser applications? When does your mind start turning to that?
We've got so much grass out there that we might even miss the first round of fertiliser, because there's no point putting it on if we've got plenty of grass this time, and I don't want to go into 4,000 covers. So the grass is growing. I can see it growing now.
This season we are thinking of actually doing more like clover counts in the fields and actually reducing nitrogen application.
On
a paddock basis based on the clover content, rather than doing a flat rate application everywhere.
Normally we put a decent load of urea at maybe 40 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare out in February at some point to get it all kicked off, but we've got plenty there, so I'm not too worried about getting it out yet. And if I end the year with fertilising the shed, happy days.
Keep it in store and save it for
the next year.
I think we're thinking about so they're more mixed species swards, I suppose, than herbal lays, but this year's knowing that we've got some older mixed species sward lays where the persistency of the chicory and plantain has fallen, is to actually let some of those herbs go to seed this year to try and maintain them in the sward. But it's just a case of working out how you manage that in the rotation, and when is it best to do that.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about best practice, but we all know that best laid plans do occasionally go wrong. What happens when you've turned those cows out and they make a bit of a mess? What's your remedial action?
Yeah, it happens, isn't it? You go out for the day and suddenly it's pissing down the rain. So probably we've reseed paddocks every spring, so if it's completely trashed, we've just reseed the paddock, which isn't ideal, but it's good to keep fresh lays going in anyway. And what we can do is, we have done before, is rolled and then direct drilled ryegrass and clover back in. And we've also used a slitter as well to aerate the soil a little bit. Yeah, so that's a general strategy. I don't mind going in with a seeder just to do some big gateways kind of thing, and just the edges where they've gone against a hedge or something. I think as long as you make sure you don't damage it a second time, I think that's really important. Is if you damaging is one thing, damaging a second time is, that's really destroys the soil structure and stuff, so we try and avoid that completely. So it's not the end of the world if there's some poaching, but if you poach the same area twice, you have to start again really on that on that area of ground. So yeah, we're not afraid to go in with the seeder to remedy some mistakes.
Fab. Right, so I can see the dogs are desperate to get out to see some of this grass, and milking time is coming round. So a huge thank you from me for talking to us today, and we will look out for the Forage for Knowledge updates and follow your story through the year. Thank you both so much.
Thanks,
Jamie. No worries.
That was Anna Bowen and Freddie Lauder from Gwadlloen Farm in Ceredigion, Wales. I'm Jamie McCoy, an AHDB Senior Knowledge Exchange Manager for Dairy. And on this episode of the Food and Farming Podcast, I'm talking grazing and spring turnout. To help offer a bit of advice on getting the best out of our pastures, especially given the recent wet weather, I caught up with Piers Badnell. Piers is a pasture-to-profit consultant with LIC, or Cogent, and I asked him about what can be done on farm to physically achieve an early turnout, especially when farmers might be thinking it's still a bit too wet.
I think one of the key things is it's getting out early. Historically, we would be turning cows out in March and April, end of March, early April, and fundamentally you've lost it by then. Because if you look at Forage for Knowledge growth curve, which is what is plotted there, you could argue is the national growth curve, because it's averaging all the data from around the world. If you look at end of March, early April, middle of April, your growth rates are in the region 50, 40, 30, 40, 50 plus, and even up to sort of 70 and 80 later on. So you can, if you just look at it, you can see it's almost vertical and the grass is getting away from you. And so therefore, it will be ahead of you and you will not, it will not be possible to catch up with it, and you will not hit good residuals. And if you don't hit good residuals, you're wasting grass and not utilising grass properly. So the first thing is have the infrastructure to get out early. Now, with a warming climate, the standard model has been for spring calves to start of calving at the beginning of February, autumn calves, cows out sometime in February. With a warming climate, and we're still seeming to have more growth over the winter, some of those dates actually might come forward a little bit. And certainly with autumn calvers, in dry weather in January, there's an opportunity to get cows out for 4 or 5 hours in the morning, so 5 or 6 kilos of dry matter for 5, 6, 7 days, however long. And then that replaces the grass in the diet. And of course, grass at that time of year, you'd have to look back through Forage for Knowledge. It started in 2009. And if you look at grass analysis in early season, that winter grown grass, it will be 12 ME plus, quite often 12 and a half to 13 ME. Crude protein wise, it's always plus 20%, and it could be top 20s. And in drier weather, actually it's cellular wise, it's drier. So the dry matters can be in the low 20s. So you've got a really good product there to feed animals. So I would urge to get out early. And just on the autumn calvers and all year round calvers and the right cow there, there's no, if you're only feeding 5 kilos of dry matter and the weather does turn to custard, you can bring cows in. That's not going to have a huge effect on the rumen, and probably the simplest way is if they're getting 5 kilos of grass outside, that's 5 kilos of grass silage less inside. And just be mindful if you are if you're doing that, that actually you need to review crude protein levels in the diet, because if you've got 5 kilos regularly going in of grass, which is 20% dry matter or even 30%, there is an opportunity then to look at your overall protein usage of your supplements, so in terms of concentrate, and actually properly bring those back down.
So you talked then a little about sending cows out for maybe just a few hours of the day. Anything is better than nothing. Yep. Is that what you would call on-off grazing?
No, I'll just go through getting cows out, and then I'll talk a bit more about on-off grazing. The on-off grazing is for when you need to, want to, have to graze cows in very tricky conditions. So at the beginning there, we certainly need infrastructure, because we need to get animal cows out to pasture. So that means we need good tracks, we need plenty of gateways, and even if that means chopping the wire and putting a new gateway so cows go in one end and out the other, make sure we do that. Also, for spring calvers in February, there's not many cows. I would sort of suggest it would probably be better to graze paddocks that are sort of in the middle of the wedge, so that it's easier for a smaller group of cows with smaller appetites to hit residuals. And then in that scenario, in March, it'd go into some of the heavier covers when you've got bigger groups of cows. Autumn calvers, you've got a massive demand straight away. So actually, I think get those heavier covers off where you can without soil damage, because if the paddocks go into what's called canopy closure, because they're very high covers where it basically looks like the wind has blown them over, that stops light getting into the base of the sward. What that does is increases stem elongation, and actually the base of the sward starts to lighten up and go end up white sort of thing, and that slows regrowth. So get those off. I think what they also need to know is what the dry matter intake potential of our cows. I alluded to it where, you know, this fresh calf cow starts at 10-11 and it takes her 3 months to get to full intake. So be aware of that. Be aware of the dryness of the grass. Is it a wet time or is it dry? And they do need an edge of appetite. And when I say an edge of appetite, I've not heard it recently. There was a saying that it was grazing was controlled starvation. If anyone talks to you about that, they know absolutely nothing about grazing management. So I would just walk away. There's not much to come from them. An edge of appetite is where the cow leaves the parlour and has a direction in its path. I suppose the analogy is you get up at 5 o'clock, milk cows, you're going for breakfast at 9, something goes wrong, so you're out till 10 o'clock. By then, you need your breakfast. So that's what we're talking about. That's not starving. That's I'll deal with everything else later once I've had my breakfast. That's how I would put that.
So I've heard you talk previously in previous conversations we've had, Piers, about grazing paddocks as wet as you dare. What do you mean by that?
So actually, because we've had a sort of wet autumn, I'm looking out the window now and it's howling down with rain, so hopefully we don't have too wet a spring. Wet as you dare is virtually all farms have a variation of paddocks and soil types, so some will take cows better at others, and others when it's really wet we have to avoid them. So what I would suggest is that you graze the wettest paddocks you dare. You know, the ones you're just going to get away with, because if then we get a lot more rain and you've grazed most of your wetter paddocks or heavier soil paddocks with therefore a higher chance of damage, if you've grazed those and it carries on raining heavily for 3 weeks, then you can go to your light land. Whereas
presumably, Piers, you're referring specifically to poaching here, are you?
Yes. So when I'm saying heavy land, anything that's liable to poach, push, and it's a tricky, you're standing on a fence and you could fall either way, but it's pushing that to as far as you can. So those that are more likely to be poached in wet weather, once they're grazed, you won't have to worry about them until the second round. So that's sometime in April. And we're talking about this in February. So even if we were talking about it in the early March, graze the wettest you dare, then they're out the way. And then you then go to your dry. Because if you go to your dry ones first and it rains, you're stuck.
Yeah, that's nowhere to go but to bring the cows back in. Absolutely. Again, potentially. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, so there's some good advice there about grazing as wet as you dare and perhaps entering the paddocks in the middle of your wedge rather than starting at the top.
Yes, I think you're obviously not going to go to the bottom because there's nothing there. But in wetter, you know, spring, the definition of a spring is a mixture between winter and summer. So on the spring days that are a bit like winter, then you might come down your wedge a little bit. So actually it's easier for the cows to hit a good residual off a lighter cover. And then on the better and drier days, go back into those heavier covers, or the heavier ground and the heavier covers. The two go sort of slightly together with that in that instance.
Yeah, so we've talked about residuals, but what we haven't talked about is target pre-grazing covers.
Okay.
What are the pre-grazing covers we should be targeting right in the spring?
Yes. So if we've opened up at 2-3, then probably depending on how long our last rotation was and how flat that is, we'll have top covers of maybe 2-6, 2-7, 2-8, and maybe with these milder winters, potentially they are approaching 3,000. And then it'll be down to sort of in the 1800s, 1900s. So there's the sort of range. And I think then it's the spring rotation planner is about an allocated area, and it's up to you to choose which allocated area, because if it says it's 1 hectare, it is 1 hectare, but which hectare is up to you. And then I think it's what ground conditions are like and what, where, and how many cows you've got calved, all those sorts of things are where you go. So as I come back to spring calver, probably in February, we're going somewhere in the middle of the wedge because we've got low numbers of cow and low number of appetite. And marsh is then go back up to the top of the wedge. And autumn calvers, you've got a big demand there. If the ground conditions will take it, take the heavier covers first, then that gives them time to regrow, etc. The idea, and so yeah, just follow that spring rotation planner, and that will tell you once you know the area and which paddock you're going to, how much grass you've got, and then how much you need to supplement on top. And I'm talking about supplement, concentrate, and silage. But I would let's say the cow can eat 14 kilos and there's 10 kilos of grazing available. I'm not talking about 4 kilos to make that up. I'm probably talking 3.9. or 3.8, just keep that edge of appetite there, so that actually when she does go out, head goes down, grazes out, she's focused on that, and then we can top her up when she comes in.
We've focused quite a bit on early turnout, but what about other forage tasks that should be happening in spring? So what should we be doing about thinking about preparing silage, for instance?
I'm a great believer as if it's possible to graze the silage grounds out, and this is not a sheep talk, so I would be lose my job if I talked about sheep, but if possible to graze out swards with either cows or young stock pre-silage, and so therefore you'll clean out the base of the sward. What we're trying to do when we cut silage is preserve and basically pickle the grass we've got. If we have too much grass over the winter, then we'll have dead leaves, we'll have a little bit of extra stalk in there, we've got probably more unhealthy and not very useful bacteria. So actually by the time if we graze out, we've cleaned out the base of the sward, and so therefore what's growing then is fresh and new. I mean, fundamentally, I don't want to get into silage making too much because there are other people who know far more about it than I am, but it's fundamentally a battle between good and bad bacteria, and by clearing that sward out, we get rid of some of the bad bacteria and all the nasties, and we are aiding the good bacteria.
I'm really glad you mentioned young stock there. It happens to be that I was in conversation with somebody else this morning talking about the rapid escalation of straw prices. And it does occur to me that might drive people to consider turning their young stock out slightly earlier than they might normally do so this year. So utilising them as a tool to clean out your silage ground before shutting it up is a good option for some people.
Absolutely. In certain situations, and perhaps in an all year round situation or something like that, where actually cows come in a bit earlier, or autumns come in prior to breeding, etc., and we have strong growth, we can use young stock, as historically we use sheep, to tidy up and take out and set our wedges up. So when I'm talking about there's a distinction between the sheep bit, because basically that was flooring everything to the floor and slowing regrowth in the spring. But we can use young stock as a tool to aid our wedge and help manage our average cover.
Have you seen data this season on winter growth rates? Did it grow all winter? It feels like it's been warm, but that's just my perception.
All I have is I have a couple of people that I ask, right, okay, what was paddock X when you closed up and what's it now? And the data that comes back to me most seasons is actually the growth is probably between about 3 and 10. And it depends where you are. I mean, there's a farm near us. I live at about 600 feet. It's about just over that. And it's quite heavy land. And their land, they probably do about 3 kilos of growth over most normal winters, this winter so far, and pretty similar last year. But some of the sort of lighter land and warmer land, and certainly if you go down into Cornwall, down the far end, 5 to 10.
Yeah,
I think that's the norm. You know, if we went back 30 years ago and I was sitting here talking about 5 to 10 kilos of growth, everyone would think I was mad because winters are milder. When we had a cold snap, when was it? I can't remember, early part of January, but, you know, it's not going to grow then. Someone quoted to me yesterday, they'd done a soil temperature in Gloucestershire and it was 8 degrees.
Already? Wow.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you next, Piers, about fertilizer and when people can start considering their fertilizer applications. So what's the critical soil temperature for how long before people start thinking about getting the tractors out?
Well, it's grass gets going at 5 degrees soil temperature, and if I think it's 5 degrees for 5 days at 10 centimeters, and you've almost got liftoff. I think we need, and if we roll back 5 or 6 years, I'd be saying out with the spinners now. I think we need to be a bit more perhaps environmentally responsible. We just talked about wet weather. And what we don't want to be doing is spinning out expensive product that ends up in watercourses, etc. So I'm not facts registered, but I came across a really very good little table that was produced, I think it was by Dairy NZ. And it's got slow, moderate and fast grass growth. So slow would be 0 to 10 kilos of dry matter a day. Moderate would be 20 to 40, and fast would be 80 plus. And then it talks about the response rate. So at a 10 kilo growth, your response is 5 to 1. At 20 to 40 growth, it's 10 to 1. And then at 80 growth, it's 20 to 1. And on that slow growth, that takes 10 to 14 works to full use. At 20 to 40, it's about 6 to 8 weeks and 3 to 4 weeks on the 80. So I think we need to bear that in mind. We also need to have a look round and just have a look at our swards. I mean, around here, if you look at swards, they're dark green. No one, I'm not aware of anyone being out with fert at the moment. So that would suggest to me that there's a reasonable level of soil nitrogen. So therefore, that would then suggest to me that actually it's probably a bit early. I mean, we're early February. I've just quoted 8 degrees, but that doesn't mean to say we could have a cold snap and that could come back right back now. So I would sort of be thinking that I wouldn't be going on just now. What I would potentially be doing is using slurry. A more liquid type of slurry on covers less than 2.1, 2.2, 2.150, something like that. Irish work suggests that 30% of the platform could be spread. And application rate, I hate to say this, but 2,500 gallons an acre, because most people will work in that. But that equates to in the region of 25 to 30 cubed of slurry per hectare. So I think we need just to be aware that, and obviously if you're putting slurry on, not in heavy rain, not on the side of a hill, etc., etc., take that all into account. And then when you start introducing some fert, probably leave the high covers until they've grazed out, and then give them a boost there. So things are turning, but I think, I think in terms of environmental responsibility and looking after our pockets, we need to just pull back a little bit. If the grass is looking like it's hungry, and the temperatures are there and it's starting to motor or starting to get going, I would consider it. But so it does depend where, you know, we're covering the whole of the UK from Land's End to John O'Groats sort of thing. So be responsible. But yeah, I'm not so sure we need it quite yet. And over the last few years, virtually everyone has dropped their end use quite considerably. Back from 250 to 150. That's over the last four or five years. So I think, you know, using bag fert is, you know, where are you going to get your best bang for your buck? Where are you going to get your return on investment? And we do, I'm going to say it again, need to be environmentally responsible.
So Piers, before we sign off, I suppose, could I ask you to summarise your top tips specifically for achieving an early turnout with cows?
Number one, plan. Absolutely plan. Use the spring rotation planner. Utilise the cow's edge of appetite and know what the cow requires.
That's Piers Badnell, a pasture to profit consultant from the south of England. Well, this is where this episode of AHDB's Food and Farming podcast draws to a close. I'm Jamie McCoy, Senior Knowledge Exchange Manager for Dairy, and hopefully you've taken away some useful information about grazing. I think it's clear from what Piers was saying, it's important to plan, plan, plan. My thanks to Piers and to Anna and Freddie for their time in producing this podcast. And of course, thank you for listening. All the best for a good grazing season.
If you have any comments about this podcast or have ideas for future episodes, please email foodandfarming@ahdb.org.uk.